Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready for more propaganda? Well, you're in the wrong place at the right time. Columbo Chronicles is for critical thinkers. Let's welcome the consumer advocate for justice. Here's the Rose, Rose Columbo.
Hi, everyone. It's the Rose, Rose Columbo, right here.
BlogTalkRadio.com/Columbo Chronicles, a live podcast adding the Justice Club, coming to Columbo Chronicles every day at 12 noon to 12:30. Grab a snack and a smoothie and sit back and find out what the lawyers don't want you to know. Be sure to push the like, follow, and share buttons and bookmark BlogTalkRadio.com/Columbo Chronicles.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. It's the Rose, Rose Columbo. Wake up, America. Is the American dream on the verge of the American nightmare? Well, it all depends on what side of the fence you're on, right? And what you actually believe or don't believe. Well, we have to believe what we're witnessing. So, one of the things we're witnessing, of course, is the Fed just raised the interest rates again. So probably not a happy thought for people who are looking to buy or sell homes. But that's reality, right? And that is what is happening. Will inflation hit us even higher and harder? I guess we'll have to wait and see. Increased number of young adults and kids and dropping dead from inflammation of the heart. And it remains a mystery to the world leaders and the mainstream media and the medical profession. It does appear. So we'll have to watch that mystery and monitor it as well. So it's a beautiful day on the West Coast, and we have birds chirping and sun shining and blue skies with the clouds. So we can look at the positive side that, hey, God is watching out for us and everyone around the world. And we have a great show for you today as we enter into the world of authors and experts with a very dynamic guest. And he has some exciting memoirs for us. He will be sharing with us in just a couple minutes when we enter into the world of authors and experts right here on Columbo Chronicles Live. And on part two, we will enter into the Justice Club because as an advocate for 30 years and an activist who has proposed laws, and they were implemented over the years by legislators, not with my name, but theirs. It's okay as long as they were implemented. But also led marches and protests and hit the national news and news clips and interviews on national and local radio and all sorts of great things because there's so little justice. And it appears since I started, when I was caught up in the legal system and found out that what is right is wrong and what is wrong is right is what we have to fight back against so we can restore justice to everyone in the United States of America and be the leaders we were intended to be and the people who the world looks up to for hope. Because if they're living in countries that have no due process of law, which sets us apart from the rest of the world, then we must speak up, speak out, and exercise our constitutional rights while we still can. Otherwise, we will be part of their third world banana republics. So stand up, speak out, and know institutional rights. Very, very important, especially for your families. So, again, I said it's a beautiful day, and we are going to have a beautiful time because we have a really dynamic guest today, and I'm excited. Have you ever dreamed, or did you ever play with the potato head when you were a kid, or Mr. Potato? And did you ever watch, of course you must have watched Star Trek. Everyone watched the popular series Star Trek and saw the movies. And did you ever dream of going beyond that? Well, guess what? Today is the day that you will get to listen and learn and hear of memoirs of Chester L. Richards. And he is an aerospace engineer, a rocket scientist, adventurer, and inventor of 19 patents. That is a lot of patents, so he must have a very genius brain here. So it's going to be a very interesting interview. And he also is an adventurer. And so he's going to talk to us about his latest book, From the Potato to Star Trek and Beyond, Memoirs of a Rocket Scientist, Chester L. Richards. And I can't wait to get started and enter into the world of authors and experts. So what I'm going to do is take a break, and we will come back in just a moment and enter into the world of authors and experts.
The Justice Club is back on Columbo Chronicles Live Podcast. Join Rose Columbo at noon and find out what tips she will provide in a world of little justice.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
Yes, be sure to bring your appetite to the Horseshoe Cafe, where there's homemade apple pie and all sorts of wonderful homemade cooking. You'll love the Horseshoe Cafe. And on that note, we will enter into the world of authors and experts right here on Columbo Chronicles Live.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Well, if you didn't hear what I provided about our wonderful guest, Chester L. Richards, let me tell you, he was an aerospace engineer, retired, inventor, adventurer, author, storyteller, and a romantic. And the philosophy developed by Chester L. Richards, aerospace engineer, adventurer, and inventor of 19 patents, has indeed caused him to view all that comes his way as an adventure, even a visit to the hospital. And that attitude took shape early in college, a bit after those early escapes from being thoroughly roasted by the great potato's molten lead flinging tricks. Chester and friend Judy Burns co-authored a spec script for Star Trek on a lark, and that story, the Thelian Web, became one of the series' most popular episodes. A veteran writer advised the young man, "You should write your passions." "But I have nothing to say," Chester thought. That was the moment he decided the real message was to fill his life with adventures. And now we're going to say hello to Chester L. Richards, the author of From the Potato to Star Trek and Beyond, Memoirs of a Rocket Scientist. So let's just get started and let him tell us his story and say hello. Hi, Chester L. Richards. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Thank you so very much for having me, Rose. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, and it's a pleasure to have you on Columbo Chronicles. You know, kids always played with Mr. Potato Head, and that's the first thing I thought of when, which I did too, and my siblings thought of when I saw the name of your book, and also Star Trek. Everybody loves Star Trek. And kids always dream of, you know, traveling into space. Maybe Elon Musk can make their dream come true.
Yeah. Well, I'm a little too old for that, unfortunately. But in my mind's eye, I've traveled all over the galaxy reading science fiction and so on. So I've been there in a sense, but not there physically.
Well, I did notice that you made a comment on adventure, that there are two types of adventures you can go on. So since you are an adventurer, which I think is exciting, can you tell us what you mean by that?
Yeah, I can. Obviously, most people, when they think of adventures, they're thinking in terms of going outdoors and doing something extravagant, climbing a mountain or whatever. Those kinds of adventures, I haven't done mountain climbing, but I certainly have done a lot of whitewater river rafting and kayaking. So I had that experience of adventures. Knocking around life, you have a variety of those interesting adventures, of which I do write about in the book. Not all of them are physical adventures. Some of them are, I guess you could say, psychological adventures, meeting some very, very interesting people along the way, and I write about that. The other type of adventure is one that everybody goes through. Anytime you have stress in your life, whether like you're getting married, that's a stressful event, or changing jobs, or in tragedy as well. You know, in the case of when my wife passed away, that was a great tragedy, and how you approach those particular events in your life, it can be very negative or it can be very positive. If you have the right kind of attitude, you can think of it as another adventure, something to learn from. Yeah, you know, if you go out in the wilderness and you live through a snowstorm and all the rest of that stuff, which I have, that's one kind of adventure. It's very uncomfortable. But you're very pleased when you survive the experience because you've got great memories. The other adventure, the one that's stressful in everybody's life, can be looked at either negatively or it can be looked at from a positive point of view. Well, there's another adventure. What did I learn from that adventure? What kind of memories do I carry forward from that? There is a third type of adventure, and it's one that I don't recommend. Getting caught up in a war zone, for example, or getting obliterated with a tornado or a hurricane, or in California, of course, we're familiar with earthquakes. Those are the kinds of adventures that you're glad you survived, but you didn't want to have it in the first place. So that's my catalog of adventures, the big three.
So I've had,
I've been through the last. I've been through hurricanes and earthquakes and wars, so I understand that third adventure pretty well.
Yes, they're not fun. So is that why you...
Well, nature doesn't want to kill you. Nature just doesn't care about you. Nature is potentially a very dangerous place, and when you go into the wilderness, you have to be prepared. You have to be prepared physically, and you have to be prepared psychologically. You have to know what you're doing. If you just go out in all innocence and just wander into the wilderness, you can get in really serious trouble. And when I was young, I did a lot of that very naive kind of stuff, and I managed to survive by hook or crook. But there were examples that really scared me half to death. One I haven't written about was getting stuck in a nest of rattlesnakes. That was a really interesting experience. And I just walked into the wrong place. But I was a kid, and I did the right thing, which was just standing still until the snakes went away. And then I was able to walk out of that. So, yeah,
well, you were smarter than me and my girlfriend when we were kids, and her parents took us camping, and we went for a walk, and we saw a rattlesnake. We're throwing rocks at it because we're so naive. Not really.
Oh yeah, well, you know,
rattlesnakes,
you're too you're too big to eat. So rattlesnakes are going to leave you alone if you leave them alone.
So, well, when you started rattling, we decided we better run.
That was a good idea. But he wasn't going to chase you. No, he just wants you to go away. And that sometimes is a really good idea when you're in the wilderness.
Yeah, we weren't trying to hurt him. We were just trying to get his attention, and we did. Kids do crazy things, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, I have those kind of memories for sure. later on, I actually went out and did things, but, you know, quite deliberately. But in every case, I was prepared for what was going on. You know, I did my homework, basically, before going out on adventures.
Yes, and so you also talk about the beautiful moments in nature when you become one with nature. Can you kind of expound on that?
Yeah. There was an event that actually changed my life, and that was it was about 1973, I think, 72 or 73. I think it was. And I had long wanted to take a river trip down through the Grand Canyon on the Colorado River. And I finally was able to do that, to afford to do that. And I didn't know what to expect. This was 2 weeks on the river with rope or powered rafts, inflatable rafts. And I was maybe a little edgy going in, a little bit hyper. When I came out, I was a totally different person. The experience of going through the canyon, it was a wonderfully tranquilizing experience, but also changed the way I looked at the world. It is really a profound experience, and it's something anybody who has the opportunity to do that, I very strongly recommend it. So that was really the first outdoor experience that I had that fundamentally changed the way I looked at the world. And I think I came out a whole lot better person than I went in.
Yes, nature is really part of us. I mean, we are made from dirt, so we are part of the earth. And I think, do you think that, you know, when we get one with nature and we put our feet on the grass or in the sand or kids play in the dirt and, you know, climb the trees, it's because of our real, true inner nature of being one with nature, but we forget that we are with nature, part of nature?
Well, yeah, we're all, you know, most of us are city bred. The fortunate few that grew up in the country have a different perspective on things, but I'm all in favor of kids getting dirty, getting into the dirt and climbing trees. I think that's really cool. I did a bunch of that when I was a kid as well, and I think that's, we're made to do that. We're actually evolved to play in the dirt and climb trees and, you know, get ourselves in trouble. The way I like to express it is, you know, from an engineering point of view, kids have a very high power to weight ratio, so they can get out of trouble that adults can't get out of.
And get stuck in, they don't get stuck in little small spaces in caves like adults do.
Oh, yeah. Well, there are a lot of things that I did when I was a kid I would never tell my mother about.
So can you tell us
I think she suspected that I did these things, but she never said anything about it. You know, I'd come home all bruised up, you know, and she'd just patch up the bruises and go on from there.
Yes, they didn't really want to hear because they're so, you know, they're little babies. They don't want them to get hurt.
Well, my mom was, there are stories that are in the book that you'll, if you read the book, you'll understand that my mom was a little bit different than most mothers in that respect. So, yeah, she was a pretty feisty lady on her own.
So tell us, who is the Great Potato and what do you mean by the Great Potato? And
well, I'm not allowed to tell you.
Oh,
my editor says that we have to leave something for readers to figure out for themselves. They have to read the book to find out. I will say this about the Great Potato. It's real. It's an experience that I had when I was young, And it was very dangerous. And I have scars on my body to prove just how dangerous it really was. So it's an exciting story. And you'll get to learn about potatoes that you never really understood before.
And I love potatoes.
And these are real potatoes, by the way.
Oh.
And there's more than one potato that's a hero in the book, by the way.
Oh, I like that. Mr. Potato's coming back alive to me. So what about Star Trek? How did your friend Judy Burns partner with you and help you write the script, Sully and Webb, which made
one of the most iconic? Well, it wasn't so much that she helped me. It's more that I helped her because she was the great storyteller. We had met in college at the university, and after she graduated, I was still a graduate student at the time, and she really wanted to write for Star Trek for reasons that I explain in the story, and but Star Trek went off the air after the second season, and she got together with other people to help put the show back on the air, but she was looking around for a good idea to write for the third season, and I came up with an interesting idea, and she thought that was good enough that she suggested that we collaborate on the script. So I provided the science part of it and, you know, some of the characters and so on, and she provided the life, because she was a really good storyteller and really good at representing people in the stories. So the collaboration was a very good one. What we found out, of course, was that there were major revisions required in the story that we presented to them. And yes, they did buy the original speculation script, but it got changed so much that it basically was a brand new story by the time it went on the air, completely new. We had been able to preserve some of the original elements, but fundamentally we had to write the whole thing over again, and we had to deliver a new script in a week. A lot of pressure.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we pulled it off, and the show was a great success.
Well, it's amazing what you can do under pressure.
Absolutely. Well, there's some explanation in the book as to exactly how we managed to pull that off, but the show was a great success. My understanding is that it won an Emmy for special effects. We got a Hugo nomination, which is a nomination for the Great Science Fiction Award in that particular year. And much to my surprise, when I was walking through the Smithsonian one day, they had a Star Trek exhibit. So I had to go over and take a look at the exhibit, of course. And there was our script, the Tholian Web. It was on display in the Smithsonian. So, you know, talk about a thrill. Gosh, I'm in the Smithsonian.
That's really exciting. Congratulations. I love this.
Thank you.
Smithsonian. Had a little trouble there saying the word. But that's really exciting. And, yeah, that's what I've heard about, you know, when you submit your book or your script and they are buying it, and then you don't recognize it on the screen because they've changed it so much. But hopefully, you know, not everyone's script gets changed, because I've seen some pretty accurate
documentary. Let me make a little correction there. We rewrote,
sure.
The rewrite, the stuff that actually went on the air, was the work that Judy and I did. So we did the revisions ourselves. But it was a completely different story than the one we started with. We had to essentially rewrite the whole story. But, yeah, when we had the viewing party, you know, all the neighbors and family and everybody came to view this thing, we had a really great party watching this thing on the TV. It was so much fun that particular evening.
Absolutely. It's always fun to see something that you've actually created and had the concept actually come to fruition. It's a really exciting feeling. And
absolutely.
Yes, and so what was it like being a rocket scientist?
Well, you know, that was my profession. I'm a physicist and in engineering. I've got degrees in physics, and then I've had further education at the graduate level in engineering. So it's a job. You know, there's a lot of pushing equations. There's a lot of building things. There's a lot of going to places and having experiences. In one of the stories, I talk about being on a rocket test stand when the rocket blew up, things of that sort. Mm-hmm. That's pretty exciting stuff. I did have one instrument that I designed that actually flew in space, and story of that is in the book, as a matter of fact. And then there's, you know, things that succeeded and things that failed, and I talk about both. But I wanted to, you know, it is a memoir in the sense that it is the background of my life and the various adventures I've had. A lot of the adventures are actually work-related adventures, and I've written those as stories. And I want to mention, by the way, that these are all standalone stories. You can read each of the stories in the book completely independent of the other stories, and you can read them in any order. Obviously, we selected a particular order for the stories because it made sense. You know, you're not constrained in thinking that all these stories are somehow tied together, so you have to read the book from end to end. You can pick and choose how you want to read the thing. And each story is an adventure in its own right.
That's cool. So the name of the book is From the Potato to Star Trek and Beyond, Memoirs of a Rocket Scientist by Chester L. Richards. And so tell us, why did you say that failure is important to our success?
Oh, well, that's something that every engineer knows. You learn, first of all, almost everything you do is a failure the first time you try and do it. If you haven't learned that lesson, you haven't lived. I mean, the fact is that we're all fallible creatures. In engineering, it's an actual discipline. And what you do is you make your best guess. You go out and do something based on your best analysis of how things are going to come out. And then they don't come out the way you expect. So then you go through a diagnostic procedure, and you figure out why the thing didn't come out the way you expected it, and you make changes accordingly. So and you learn very, very quickly through that process of trying and failing and then trying and failing and so on, fixing and after you've done the diagnosis. And so you tend to converge to a correct answer through a process of trial and error, but you have to be really canny about how you do it. You have to do a proper diagnosis and really understand why things didn't go the way you expected. In software, I've done a lot of software, and I've kind of got a rule that I can't write more than 6 lines of code without having a bug in the code. You know, you talk to any software engineer or programmer about that, and, you know, bugs in the code are absolutely enormous and completely frequent. And so what you have to do is develop diagnostic procedures to locate where the bug is and fix it. And it's the same in engineering in general, and I think it's probably the same in life. And, you know, we go through life and we stumble around a lot, and then we learn from our mistakes. But you don't learn from the stuff you do right, because you did it right, so there's nothing to learn.
Well, I think that you just described what another book for a second or third marriage.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to go there. I had one marriage, and that was wonderful.
Considering the divorce rate, I think it's a great idea to go through those steps.
Well, yeah, I know.
It would help a lot. So I wanted to say I'm sorry you lost your wife, and but you know she's in a better place and in heaven, and she's watching over you. So that's
good. Well, I think she's probably motivated. Well, she's motivated me in multiple ways, but I think she's definitely pushing things around and opening doors for me. So some good things have happened since she died. Yeah, she collapsed. She had a heart failure and collapsed right in front of me, and that was a very difficult thing to deal with. If you if you've had a tragedy like that, you understand. You don't. I don't have to say anything about it. You don't understand. If you've never had a tragedy like that, there's no words that can describe exactly what it's like to go through that. So, but I will say this about it. I was in such despondency as a result of my wife's passing. And what brought me out of that despondency was writing, just starting to write stories. And as I explain in the book, I got to thinking about each of one of those stories as being a love letter to my wife. And I gradually rebuilt my morale and rebuilt my life through the process of writing those stories. So what you're seeing in the book is a reconstruction process as well as just a bunch of adventures. And so there was a great deal of good that came out of the tragedy. There's no question about that.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I think that's really important, and it's also encouraging and empowering for other people who have lost loved ones. I have, and many millions of people do. So I think that's a very important statement. And so tell me, I know that you said that things out of the future, on the future, and why no matter what, people and some things will never change. What things do you think, a couple of things do you think that will never change?
Well, I think human nature is what it is. You know, the culture can change. There's no question about that. But the fundamental motivations of individual human beings won't change at all. And, I mean, you can look back tens of thousands of years and you see people doing the same things that we're doing today. Or look all the way through recorded history and you'll see the same sort of things. People have their, you know, their hopes and they have their dreams and they have their nightmares and they, you know, some of the dreams are nightmares and some of the dreams are really good. People have their families and parents have the love of their for their children and their children have the love for their parents. Yeah, and there can be upsets to that. There can be things that don't work out among people, and not everybody's life is a good life. But fundamentally, if you look back through history, you find that what people were saying thousands of years ago is essentially the same thing as we're saying to each other today and saying to ourselves today. So I think, you know, you can come back 10,000 years from now and people will be pretty much the same. The technology will be different. There's no question about that. You know, so the culture that which is technology relies on a particular technology at a given time. That will change. I mean, it's changed in my lifetime. I mean, I was in a video conference with a lady in Spain the other day. And that's pure science fiction. You know, that's the kind of stuff that I read about in the 1950s, the far future when you could talk over video phones to people halfway around the world. Well, I've actually done that now. So, you know, So that's going to continue to change in the future. And there will be space travel and all kinds of things for people. But the nature of a human being won't change. And we'll be the same kind of people.
Well, that's good to know because I like people the way they are right now, humans.
Well, I have an interesting perspective. I'm old enough now that when I was a kid, you know, I was thinking, gosh, I wonder what people would be like after the, you know, in the 21st century and in year 2020 or 2022. What are the people going to be like then? Those are people in the future. Well, I'm now living in that. And most of the people around me are so much younger than me, but these are the people of the future that I was dreaming about when I was a kid, you know. So I'm living in that future, and it is indeed a science fiction world that I live in now.
Right, it is. Very, very true. And so my last question is, what is the magic door?
I have no idea what the magic door is.
A Stargate?
Oh, the Stargate. Well, that was a TV series, of course, and also a wonderful movie. I enjoyed the movie enormously. I have no idea whether we'll have Stargates in the future. It's possible. Right now, it doesn't look like the laws of physics will allow it, but we don't know everything. You know, that one of the things I can say as a professional physicist is how little we really know. The universe is full of mysteries. So that's one thing that you really understand when you've studied subjects like quantum mechanics, for example. It's a very mysterious thing, and we really don't understand how the universe works. We are able to model some of it very accurately, but there's so much mystery out there. And some of that mystery will be cleared up in the future. But right now, it's still a mystery.
Yes, that's why, you know, I always encourage everyone not to retire, because age is just a number, and time doesn't stop, and age doesn't stop, so don't worry about it. Just keep trying to learn as much as you can and do what you love and your passion is that maybe you didn't do in the past, and just continue, because you cannot learn enough in your lifetime to, you know, that's so vast and so mysterious, and you're right about that, and I think people should forget about the word retirement and continue to be excited about what is. That they don't know that they could learn.
My dad went through a second career after he retired from his first career, and he didn't hang up his spurs, so to speak, until I think he was 87 years old and basically no longer able to continue physically. So he never retired. He just started a second career. By the way, the second career was that of an engineer and inventor, because his first career he was a printer. So very different, but he had patented inventions and was making money from his inventions. So, you know, you just don't give up. You just keep on going.
Exactly. Because life's short, no matter how long you live. You can live to be 100 or more, but life is very short. And so considering everything that's out there that people can be excited about and as a challenge and unknown, and so many things that talents that people have that they don't even weren't able to experience when they were younger because things happen in life that they can experience maybe, you know, after they have the time, their kids are growing. So, yeah, I'm a true believer in that. And I'm really excited about your book, From the Potato to Star Trek and Beyond, Memoirs of a Rocket Scientist, Chester Al Richards, and now's your time to shine. And you can give any message you like to the audience, and you can also let them know if you have any contact information online and where they can purchase your book.
Oh, sure. Well, you can get the book from Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The website's it's available there. And I have a website. It's Chester L. Richards, just one word, chesterlrichards.com. And I recommend that people take a look at that website. There are some stories in there that have not been published, which will probably go into a future book. And we'll continue to post new stories at that website, chesterlrichards.com, one word. And I think you'll find that it's an entertaining website. I hope you do anyway. And it will also link you to other ways of getting information about me and about the book.
Fantastic, Chester L. Richards. And I am very, very happy that you are pursuing your inventions in this book, because I think it's going to put a smile and encourage people and empower them to keep on doing whatever it is that their passion is as well. So much success with your book, and thank you so much for being on Columbo Chronicles Live.
Well, thank you, Rose. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Have a blessed day. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you, Rose. And thanks
to
the audience for listening in, too. I hope you are entertained by the book and hope you're entertained by this interview as well.
I'm sure they are. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Thank you.
And Chester L. Richards has left the building, and his book is From the Potato to Star Trek and Beyond, Memoirs of a Rocket Scientist. And be sure to go to Amazon and Barnes & Noble on there as well and look up the book and purchase a copy and share it with other people, because I think it's going to put a smile on your face. And like you said, you can read different parts of the book, which is really nice as well. So on that note, we're going to enter into the world of justice, and we're going to take a little break, grab a cup of coffee, because there's very little justice in the world, so we have to make our own justice. And so stay tuned, because we will be back in just a moment.
The Justice Club is back on Columbo Chronicles Live Podcast. Join Rose Columbo at noon and find out what tips she will provide in a world of little justice.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world. Written with an Orwellian twist, will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up on Columbo Chronicles Live, because now we're entering into the Justice Club. And as an advocate of 30 years and an activist and also who led a grassroots movement in the country, I want to talk about health effects that may or allegedly may be occurring around the world. Four doctors die within days of the fourth dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. And you can look that up on bitchute.com and read about it. In over 5,000 cases of sudden adult death syndrome, doctors trying to determine why young people are suddenly dying from heart inflammation since January 2021. I think everyone should be concerned, because it doesn't appear that the AMA, HHS, NIH, CDC, WHO are very concerned. So we can't just dismiss this. We the people must save the children. So whatever it is, we need to find out the truth. We need to stand up, speak up, and save the children. What would we do without babies? We would have no sovereign nations. When the number of babies diminishes below the rate of preserving nations, which America has done since the 70s, over 70 million future natural-born Americans were wiped out. So they're not here to defend our country or lead our nation into the future or present. So it's a very serious problem, and that's why God said one man, one woman is to bond, marry, and to procreate more babies, children, and fill the earth so that sovereign nations can continue into the future, because without babies, there's no one to preserve these nations, laws, cultures, civilizations, languages, music, dancing, fashion, and way of life. And that would be a very boring world. If we had a one world, borderless world, it would be extremely boring and dull. People are the core of what makes the world a place of love and striving for freedom, liberty, rights, and peace. And family is the foundation of a civilized nation. And as you grow older, family becomes even more important when your children are there for your holidays or your birthday or calling you to say hello or asking if you need anything or being by your side, your grandchildren. And so this is why God created Adam and Eve and you. So everyone that's crying out to abort their babies. They want the right to abort their babies. So all they have to do is say no. Just say no if you aren't protected. Otherwise, you can get free contraceptives and be responsible and do whatever is necessary to prevent the pregnancy, which is available today. Talk, go to the free clinics wherever there are. And you can even order contraceptives online very cheaply. So if you have an iPhone and you have a computer and you have designer shoes on, you can afford contraceptives, and this would avoid this division in America about the right to life, which the Constitution guarantees. So remember, without babies, we have no future. No future for America or any other sovereign nation. So a 22-year-old dies of a heart attack while playing. Know how youngsters should take care of cardiac health. Well, why are they suddenly dying since January 2021? They're blaming it on smoking and drug use, but causing irregular heartbeat. Well, kids have been smoking and drinking for generations, and they weren't dying of heart attacks or strokes. And they leave the borders open so that smugglers can come in, traffickers with drugs and fentanyl and guns and whatever else they're bringing into our country, into the inner cities, that destroy the minds of the young people, destroy their lives, and cause them to drop out of high school and become more depressed and even suicidal, or end up in jail or dead. So these hypocritical statements by our government are ridiculous. We had secure borders. We had less drugs coming into our border. We didn't have fentanyl flowing in from China, and we didn't have child traffickers coming into our country at the rate they are coming in the past 20 or 25 years. So there is a more serious problem than they are willing to admit to. And so my point is that they are not addressing why so many young people are suffering from heart inflammation, strokes, and heart attacks since January of 2021. And that does need to be addressed and not ignored. They admit that their numbers are inaccurate, which is under the EUA, the Emergency Use Act, and the PrEP Act. The original EUA requires that no one is harmed, and if anyone's harmed, that the PrEP Act, which provides 100% immunity to the government and big pharma from liability, is null and void. So they are, in my opinion, in violation of the EUA and the PrEP Act as I speak today. Biden's $10 billion COVID vax program may be funneling cash to liberal political groups just like Planned Parenthood does. And Planned Parenthood denied that they were selling baby parts for profit, which is organ harvesting, and which is a crime in the United States, while they point their finger over at China as an inhumane act and a crime in China. But here they call it legal abortion and a woman's choice. Well, what about the baby's choice? They're fighting to live, and the abortionist is making money off of the abortion and Planned Parenthood. And it's a majority of Democrats who fund Planned Parenthood with our taxes, because Obama included it into Obamacare mandated taxpayer funded abortions. And so it's not just in America. It was required that Americans' taxpayer fund abortions worldwide in third world countries like Africa and India and all third world countries, paid by the American people, which is a globalist agenda that violates our sovereignty and our rights to live in a sovereign country and pay taxes in a sovereign country. So in other words, if you definitely look at it correctly, we are being forced to pay for, to implement laws to abort babies in foreign countries, which we have no business doing. Just because those people are poor, we have no right to fund abortions, international countries, especially Africa and India, who are the targets after America's abortion implementation. We have fewer babies born now than ever. And that risks the sovereignty of this great nation. We need babies to grow up and to be leaders and to be natural-born Americans, to be presidents of the United States, congressional members, senators, and to keep our government intact. So this article says, a group of lawmakers are demanding an audit of the Biden administration's $10 billion COVID-19 Community Core program after reports it may be directing cash to partisan liberal political groups and giving left-wing activists access to Americans' private information. And Planned Parenthood is a revolving door. The Democrats fund Planned Parenthood, and they force us to taxpayer fund Planned Parenthood. And then the Planned Parenthood makes money off of selling the baby parts, which is evidenced by Judicial Watch, who finally got the emails from the government through a FOIA request and proved that they were chopping the babies very carefully and selling each body part for to the highest bidders. Stem cells, skull, tissue, organs, etc. That is very sinister and immoral crime against those babies. In a letter to the U.S. Justice Department and Human Services, Inspector General Kristen Grimm, the senators and representatives raised concern over the involvement of highly partisan organizations in the public education campaign, potentially inappropriate direct or indirect funding to these politically affiliated groups, and possible access these organizations may have to personally identifiable information of Americans. In other words, they have totally violated our personal privacy rights guaranteed and established by the United States Constitution. They don't follow the U.S. Constitution any longer. Artificial intelligence can be used for good or evil. Think about that. And abortions can be implemented if you are raped or involved in incest, or your health is at risk. So abortions are not completely wiped out for reasonable reasons. And Planned Parenthood funnels their money and donates part of it back to the Democrat candidates. So it is a revolving door. of pregnant women and unborn and born babies used as human commodities for human capital, for their financial gain, for donations to Democrat candidates, who then continue the mandated taxpayer-funded abortions paid by Americans. So why are we funding Planned Parenthood, a private company? Why are we funding Pfizer's distribution of experimental and trial injections, which are contain and include a Pfizer secret formula they refuse to reveal of what they're injecting into millions of people's bodies? Bill Gates says they're in going that you have no choice and they will inject every child with a genetically engineered organism, and no one has asked what organism. What organism are they injecting into these children and these babies? And the babies and the children admitted by Dr. Fauci, CDC, and WHO, and the entire medical system, babies and children don't get COVID. And there's a 99.99% recovery rate, including Dr. Zelenko, my hero, who passed away recently. So Americans really need to take a deeper look at what reality is under all these underlying laws that are not for the good of the people, but for the good of their bank accounts. So it also says that the letter was signed by Senator Richard Burr, Republican of North Carolina, ranking member of the Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, and many, many others. It says, it is incredible that HHS and the Biden administration would partner with a political organization and Democrat-affiliated campaign consultants on a $10 billion taxpayer-funded vaccine-confident public education campaign ostensibly intended to appeal to all Americans. It is not clear from publicly available information exactly what these groups do and what benefits they derive from being a founding member of the COVID-19 Community Core. It sounds more like the COVID-19 Community Cult for-profit industrial complex linked to communist China, unleashed by Americans the Wuhan lab in communist China. So think about it and do your homework and your research, because nothing said on Columbo Chronicles is intended to be legal, medical, financial advice, just a dissemination of information for educational and entertaining purposes only. So God bless you. Stay alert and do your homework.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world. Written with an Orwellian twist, will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com.
Well, my friends, time flies. And now is the time to say goodbye. Thanks so much for being part of the Columbo Chronicles family. You are appreciated. Please do it now. Bookmark. Push that like, share, and follow button. Oh, and don't forget to comment below and stay in touch. Make your family part of the Columbo family. Until next Wednesday at noon, remember, God loves you, and so does the Rose.